Hi, everyone. Today, we are going into a very special conversation. We are talking about spirits and the world beyond. Welcome to our studio, Roger Lambert.
Hello.
Hello.
So, Roger, we let you do the introduction. Tell us about yourself. What do you do?
I'm first and foremost an operative alchemist. I'm a bioenergetic therapist. And sometimes a geobiologist.
So what does that mean?
the short answer. I was actually once asked by someone to how would you describe alchemy if you only had a Lyft ride with somebody, like a one sentence thing to describe alchemy, which is an extremely deep subject. I thought long and hard about this, and then actually came up with an answer that alchemy is the conscious and deliberate I've even forgotten what I actually said now. It's to help nature with its own evolution. It's an understanding of nature. So it's a deliberate and a conscious interaction and conversation with nature that actually helps the operator and nature itself evolve. So that's the alchemical side of it. Bioenergetic therapist. It's a conversation between myself as a therapist and the patient. And if I actually have one, let's say, gift, it's to be able to connect with somebody's soul. And so I'm not speaking to their conscious mind or their unconscious mind. I'm actually speaking to the pilot of this terrestrial vehicle that's in front of me.
And is this what we did together? Like one time you came and we did?
Yeah, it's gone a little deeper now. It's because people used to come to me for treatments because they had problems, let's say, physical problems, sometimes mental problems or whatever. And I'm treating more and more people now where it's actually a much higher connection, where we're going past symptomatic illness and we're going actually into helping the soul of the person achieve or get onto the right track to achieve their mission here down on Earth. So it's got a lot more subtle recently. I mean, I've been doing it for like 30 years, and
more and more subtle.
It's becoming more and more subtle now, and the conversations between the soul and the two of us, if we were doing it together, are becoming more and more precise. So it's not about curing a sore knee anymore, or symptomatic illness. It's about life-changing decisions that need to be made to actually take people further onto their path.
Because our soul is talking to us. It's trying to guide.
Yes, but we're not listening.
Yeah.
That's the problem today. I mean, we look at it. Yeah. I look at it from, let's say, an alchemical point of view, which is quite easy to understand, where the three principles, talking about plant alchemy, let's say, the three principles are the sulfur, the mercury, and the salt, otherwise known as, let's say, the soul of the plant. You have the spirit of the plant, and then you have the body of the plant. So it's a trinity, like in a lot of esoteric and religious tradition. And this trinity is it's deeper than we can actually imagine, because on a plant level, the soul of the plant would be its, let's say, defining characteristic. So, and the vehicle of the soul of the plant would be the active ingredient, otherwise known as the essential oil. And the essential oil is, when you smell the essential oil of mint, let's say, you know you're not smelling the essential oil of rosemary. So that is its defining characteristic. Whereas the spirit of a plant it's easier to understand in the plant realm because if we ferment any plant whatsoever, we get one product, ethanol. Other ones, ethanol, the products of fermentation. But you distill any plant on the planet and you will get ethanol. So it is the universal spirit of the plant realm. And that means you could, I see a lotus in front of me, you could ferment a lotus and you would get a spirit, or you could ferment this green plant, you could get a spirit, and those spirits would be almost identical. So it's this universal spirit throughout the whole realm, which is what we say in alchemy, it's the life spark. It's what gives you life. It's the flame of life, the little étincelle, the spark of life, but it's not what defines you. That's the universal spirit. And then the body is the body. So you have the actuating cause of your reality, which is your soul. And then you have the spirit, which gives you the life spark, which it means you're alive. And to extrapolate that up to the human level is, I like to explain it in a way that's very easy to understand to my patients or my clients, is you imagine life is like driving a car. It's a car journey. It's your spirit that's driving the car, because a spirit is here for life experience. All it wants to do is get experience. It doesn't matter what it does to get experience. That's why sometimes we do stupid things. Whatever it says, oh, I'm going to go skiing. That girl looks lovely. I think I'd like to try and chat that girl. Oh, I think I want a gin and tonic now. Oh, I'm going to go running. That's the spirit. It's very easily distracted, and it's just wanting experience. Whereas your soul is here on a mission. It's here for one thing: to get from A to B through life, and to achieve what it needs to achieve—the life goal of the soul. And unfortunately, it's the spirit who's driving the car, going left and right, wherever it likes. And you get the backseat driver, which is usually the soul. The backseat driver saying, oh, I think you should go left here. And the spirit's saying, oh, shut up, I'm driving. And it's just doing this. Yeah. And sometimes you'll get something that happens where the soul will probably, let's say, cause an accident in the car, to stop you going down a road because it needs to go somewhere else. So the ideal thing is to actually have the soul up in the passenger seat navigating. That's when the soul, coming back to your question, when the soul is actually listening. Your spirit is actually, and your mind, which is spirit, is actually listening to what your soul is trying to tell you. And sometimes the communication is very ambiguous. It's a bit flustered, but you can actually get to a stage where, I don't know if it's ever happened to you in your life, where suddenly the soul who's just had enough of the spirit going left and right says, stop the car. And then the soul will get into the driving seat. And so then the spirit's in the passenger seat with white knuckles hanging on, because the soul knows exactly where it's going and it drives extremely fast. And this is where you will get sometimes you will completely change your life in the blink of an eye, as in, it will just stop and you will just go down another direction. You'll say, right, that's it. I'm giving up smoking. I'm giving up drinking. We're not going to Barcelona this year. We're going to India and we're going to do this, this, and this, and this. And you're sitting there thinking, well, that's a bit weird. I've just said all that. That's actually where your soul does. And suddenly things start happening extremely quickly.
This you realize it usually afterwards?
The benefit of hindsight usually helps. When you think, well, that was a bit weird, that last trip we went on. Yeah. And that's where your soul is actually getting into the driving seat. And you come back to your question, we normally listen to our souls. The fact is we're not really listening, or we can't hear the soul, and we're trying to ignore it because sometimes it's going against our best interests. And that's why sometimes, because souls are, they're infinite.
Yeah.
Infinite. They are just pure love, but they don't really have any emotions either. So they don't care if they will cause you to break your legs. So you do not go on that skiing trip, because they want you to go somewhere else. And so I'm certain now, after many years of experience, that your soul actually, which is the actuating cause of your existence, can actually manipulate reality to force you to do something.
So I want to ask you, because when I had my first treatment with you, when I called you, it was because I had this sadness in me, which I could not explain. Like, I was really sad. It was also the time of COVID and all the drama around us. And it had taken me really down. And also the fact that I had this continuous desire to go back to India. Like, I just didn't want to be here. I had all, which was inexplicable because I made this decision. I mean, or I think I made this decision. But then there was always something that was pulling me back. And that's what you said. You said that I'm here, but I've left my soul behind. So what does that mean? Like,
no, you've not left your soul behind, but your soul may be a bit homesick. There's maybe unfinished business back in India that you've come over here, or it may be your soul brought you over here, but your spirit, your experience, which is that holds all your memories back in India, where you got a bit. I think you were homesick in a way. Because it was just after the birth of your
foreign,
just before, yeah, spring. Yeah. So you were probably having a bit of a hormone cocktail at the time, which, I mean, giving birth is no easy task, and that's why we leave it to you. So. If I can remember rightly, during your treatment, I think if I would have to analyze it today, in response to your question, I would think the idea of having another child here, maybe you were thinking, should I have this child in India? Going back to your roots, because that's where you were born, that's where you're from, and probably a little homesick. I'm quite sure that your soul and then where I brought you here for another mission in your life.
I know I'm in a much better place now, but then there's also something that I want to share with you, which I've never told anyone before.
Well, you're going to tell a lot of people just now.
Yes, because I'm trying to understand these things for some time now. My grandmother passed away recently. And I was very close to my grandmother. And luckily, I was in India just a month before she passed away. So I got to meet her one last time, which was also a fear because I had not been to India for a long time. And I was like, what if I don't get to see her? So I met her and she passed away. And when she passed away, I feel she did something. So whatever that that yearning was, because it was not just a desire to go back to India. Like, I can't explain to you how intense it was that I need to go back. And
she died just after. Right after.
Right afterwards.
After your trip?
Mm.
Yeah.
Like, she just got to see.
Yeah, I got to see her and when I came back 2 weeks after that, she passed away. But then with her going, that yearning to move back went away. Like, the perspective changed suddenly. The perspective was like, okay, this is home now, which is very weird.
You were cutting the ties, and your last tie was maybe your grandmother.
I mean, I still have family.
Yeah, but I think you've got a special relationship with your grandmother. The fact that, you look at it just from the evidence, you have a yearning to go back to India. You go back to India and you meet see your grandmother, who's maybe you knew she was coming to the end of her life, and meeting her physically there. Obviously, there was an energetic exchange of some sort. Like, you went to get your inheritance. We're not talking about gold coins. You went to get your energetic inheritance because And I'm certain, like, in certain traditions, it's almost like the elephants, matriarchal society, etc. And from mother to daughter, or if it skips sometimes, it could go from grandmother to granddaughter. And so you went back to collect something.
And also, she felt really sick afterwards.
Yeah.
Something with the throat. And my son also had the same disease. Weird. Like really... Something weird.
So, now you will tell me if I'm wrong or not, but since my son has been born, I believe that he's my mother. My mother passed away when I was really, I was only 7. And since he's been born, like, he was born and we have this weird connection and the things that were happening around us that time, it was like we were only for each other. And I had this thing that he's my mother. So now when I went to meet my grandmother, who's also his mother, if my theory is correct, first of all, he got the chance to meet her, okay? And she was really on her deathbed, you can say, in the last few days of her life. And then the moment we came back, he had, what you call the swelling of the nodes in the throat, which they say is an emotional response to something. But he was not even 2 years old. So, you see, it must have been very...
2 years, it doesn't mean he doesn't feel anything.
Exactly.
Because he's animated by a spirit and a soul. Who knows? So there is compassion.
Yes, exactly.
So even if he doesn't understand.
And then very strong reaction, and the doctor didn't understand why this happened or whatever, and he didn't need any treatment. 3-4 days later, it started going down. And then the day my grandmother passed away, my dad just sent me a message that Nani has expired, and. The moment I read that message, it got very strong in the same place where my son had the thing. I got a very strong pain. And the next morning, I woke up and this was completely swollen to right up through my cheek. Mm-hmm. And the pain was so unbearable. Like
the whole face was
swollen up.
Yeah.
From that throat.
And then it stayed for about a week or something. And I tried to do everything. Like I tried to talk about her. I tried to write about her. And, you know, because I knew it's an emotional response. Mm-hmm. But... what do you think?
The relationship, well, between your grandmother and yourself, and then there's you and your son. And there's a few topics here because you're touching on reincarnation as well, which is an interesting topic. Quite a controversial topic as well, depending on which religious or spiritual bent you come from. But you need to understand that a child will share the etheric body, or let's say the first spiritual body of its mother for the first 7 years of its life. This is why we say in French, after 7 years old, it's like the age of reason.
Yeah.
The age of reason. Or it's, we say, the age of, I've got reason. That's where the child becomes in a form of independence. It's actually not 7 years. It's actually 7 years run out. So it's 8 years, as in when they have their eighth birthday, because you think about the seven principal chakras, which are the archetypes of certain characteristics of the human psyche, that when a child is born, it will have it the first chakra, and then it basically works up the chakras each year. Okay. And then after 8 years completely run out, it becomes an autonomous spiritual being in its own right. So it's no longer attached by the spiritual umbilical cord of the mother. So the fact is that you and your son had very similar symptoms is probably because he is linked to you. And he was getting...
that energy.
Yeah, he was getting that energy from you. And so he manifested the same symptom. Talking about the when you said that I think my son's my mother, I've often been asked, because I'm Christian, and when if you actually read the Bible, they say a man lives only once and then he's judged, so reincarnation is off the table. But from an alchemical point of view, I've come up with a theory that I think actually stands on its own, because when you think that everyone in, let's say, Christendom, the Christian world does not believe in reincarnation, but everywhere out into the East and the Far East, it's the main thing. It's only reincarnation. So how do you actually explain this diametrically opposed belief system and make everybody happy? Like, not piss off the Christians and not piss off the Muslims, the Hindus, the people who believe in reincarnation. And it was through alchemy that I actually came up with this theory. Is coming back to what I just said, you have your soul, which is, let's say, the essential oil of a plant, the actuating cause, the characteristics of that plant. And then you have universal spirit, which is ethanol. Okay. And when you distill ethanol, like you make whiskey or whatever, you can distill this alcohol, but it will always have a slight flavor. That's what we look for when we're making whiskey or gin. Always have this slight flavor. So my theory is that, to please everybody, that when, let's say, before you're born, the soul says, I need a human experience. Okay. I'm a spiritual being. I would like to go around and have a human experience. So what do I need for that? Well, I need, spark of life. I need to be able to live. Okay. And I also need a body and a soul. So as we say in alchemy, when you reunite the spirit with the body, a soul will manifest. So, but a soul is not coming down here just to have fun. It's on a mission. So it'll think, right, okay, what do I need that will prepare me and best take me in the directions naturally where I need to go once I'm down there? So I'm going to exaggerate this. So the bowl, let's say this bowl, which has got the universal spirit in, the spark of life, okay? I'll digress a bit. When you die, your soul, let's say, goes back to heaven. But your spirit, because nothing energy is, cannot be destroyed, it can only be transformed. So your spirit, your life force, will then go back into this bowl, swimming pool, let's say, of spirit. But it goes back into that swimming pool of spirit with all its experience here. Everything it's ever done, spoken, or whatever. So it goes in and it taints this. It's like the collective unconsciousness of Carl Jung kind of idea. Mm-hmm. So all its experience goes back into that swimming pool. So when the soul thinks, right, I need to come down, I'm going to really exaggerate now. I've got some really specific things I want to do when I'm down here. So I'm going to, in the spark of life, I'm going to take 20% of Gandhi. Okay. I'm going to take 5% of Hitler, because I need to be a bit hard, stuff like that. And then I'm going to take this, 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 and this. And then it will incarnate. And that pre-tinted spirit will then take it naturally in the directions that it needs to go. So coming back to the reincarnation question, that will please, let's say, Hindus and Christians. They're both right, because when you die, your soul goes straight back up to heaven and it can be judged, whatever. But your spirit goes back into the bowl and it can be reused because it is universal spirit. So the Hindus, Muslims, everyone who believes in reincarnation is looking at it from a spirit point of view. Not a soul point of view, a spirit point of view. And all the Christians are just looking at the problem or the situation from a soul point of view and aren't even considering spirit. It's just soul. So it's this double-edged sword where you could actually, it could actually be right. The Hindus, everyone who believes in reincarnation, right? Because they're just looking at it from a spirit point of view. And everyone in Christendom, let's say, they're right as well, because they're just looking at it from a soul point of view. Because if in alchemy, the three principles are, they're mixed to create a holistic universal being, but they are separable. They are defined individual essences or parts of the individual. You have a soul, you have a spirit, and you have a body, the Trinity. Okay? And so it just depends which way you're looking at it. They can actually explain it. Reincarnation. So coming back to your grandmother, I don't know what happens. I mean, I could have a guess, but I think you were called back to India. That's why you had the yearning. And then when your grandmother passed away, your family's still back in India, but you don't have this yearning anymore because you actually achieved your mission. That was a soul mission. That was a soul contract that you had with your grandmother. It was a contract you had that you needed to go back there at that specific time so she could give you something.
Yeah.
And then now you've got it and you're back. It's cool. You don't need to go back to India. So it could be easily explained like that. It's not necessarily symptomatic, but it's an energetic thing. And this is what I'm fascinated with nowadays is contracts between souls.
Fascinating.
Yeah, contracts between souls. I mean, we could go really far down the rabbit hole and get into changing souls during your actual life. That's another kind of contract, but it's...
changing souls?
Changing souls.
Very good.
If we look at let's say, divine creation, we're all on this mission. We're all trying to go somewhere. There is individual roads, then there's collective roads, and then there's universal roads that we're going down. And I think humanity is as a whole species, as a physical and a spiritual aspect, is on a mission. And certain things, let's say, a soul that comes down, incarnates, is born, and then goes through life. That's one way of doing it, for a soul to have an experience down here. But for the collective, let's say, certain things need to be done. And certain souls, let's say, who are coming for very particular missions, who do not have time to go through the process of incarnation, spending 3 years shitting themselves in a nappy and being spoon-fed, and then growing up like that, they're coming for a very specific mission, and they need somebody of a certain, let's say, spiritual maturity, or who is going down a road that suits them perfectly. And it's a contract between souls, and you sign it before you come. I mean, you should read the small print before you sign any contract. And so you can actually, there'll be a moment or several moments in your life where you will change souls. I've had it done, it's 5 times now in my life. And this is why I'm convinced that it's possible. There's a lady, she wrote a book, I forgot the name of the lady, but it was called Walk In, talking about walking, a soul walking in and another soul walking out. I'm not keen on her analysis of actually how the process works and why it happens, but she's got a lot of anecdotal evidence that says it's possible. And the fact is that I've had it happen to me on several occasions, and some of my patients as well. And the symptoms are, I mean, quite radical. Can be, you can, let's say, come down in the morning into the bathroom, you look in the mirror, and it's like, who the fuck is that? Mm-hmm. I mean, literally, who is that chunk of meat staring out at me from the mirror? And it's a bit freaky. Mm-hmm. It's And it's not a psychological or a psychiatric disassociation from the body. It's looking at it through this particular lens. It's concrete.
From the world that we live in, the kind of education that we have, like, there is no knowledge of the spirit world. Like, this is what it is, and it's so flat, all that we talk about. So when something like this happens, the first thing you're going to think is, this person is crazy. Like, who do they talk to? Like, who do they say, okay, I don't know who this is, what is wrong with them? What the first thing you'll do is take them for psychiatric help.
Yeah, well, that usually ends up happening.
That's what I feel, and we've had this discussion before, people who are in the psychiatric ward, most of them must be people who've had intense spiritual experiences and not understood what is happening.
Or they could be under demonic influence, another subject.
Yeah. Okay, we got really quickly into this. Do you want to tell us how it started? Like, what did you learn? How does it come to, or is it a gift? Or like, let's start from the beginning and then we get into the demonic words.
It all started when I was 6 years old. Back in England, in a farm in Yorkshire, a farm in the middle of nowhere, the farm was owned by the parents of my dad's best friend at the time. And we used to go up there and spend time up there. And we were all in the back kitchen one evening. I was 6 years old. Back kitchen is, you know, it's not like the main kitchen or where it's where you hang out, where the wood burning stove is, where they cook and stuff. So it's the life and soul of the farm. And we were there and I said, well, I need to go for a pee. So I trotted out the kitchen into the middle of the house, up the stairs, and then there's a corridor that runs along the whole of the house at the top. And I went to the end of the corridor, into the toilet, had a pee, and I came out, and something just drew me to not go back into the way I'd come, but to spiral down this little spiral staircase that went into the back library, a very narrow staircase. And on the way down, I saw a woman coming up the stairs. I said hello, and she smiled back at me. And went back into the kitchen and I said, who's the nice old lady who lives next door? And Ada, the farmer's wife, said, well, no one lives next door. We're in a farmhouse in the middle of nowhere. And I said, yes, the nice old lady who lives next door. And she said, don't be ridiculous. And I said, yes, I was walking down the stairs and I met the old lady. And she goes, well, what did she look like? And I described her. She was a lady of a certain age. She had her grey hair tied back in a bun. She had a black dress and a white pinafore. And she smiled at me. And she goes, oh, that nice old lady. So the conversation ended. I was happy. And she took my mum on one side and she said, your son's just given the perfect description of a ghost who haunts this farmhouse and two other farmhouses. It's actually a ghost of a midwife. She'd actually seen her, I think, and but they could hear her quite often. And
continued,
like,
it wasn't a scary ghost. They continued living.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, they're very down to earth, the farming people.
And who told you about she died and she's not there? Like, when did you learn about it?
I think it was in the car going home. And that was the last time I ever went for a pee upstairs in that farm. But that it had ripped the veil. I mean, I was 6 years old, so it's fairly aggressive. The veil was ripped, and it was a bit of a two-way street from then on. So I've been in and out of the invisible all my life. But that's what triggered it. I mean, the story goes on a bit with the ghost when I went back in a guided meditation when I was like 30 odd. And it turns out that, when I walked down the staircase, it was very narrow. I walked through her. I didn't think it was weird, but had walked through this ghost and what had happened. Was it a ghost? Was it just a manifestation of a divine being? Because apparently she took a bit of my soul as I walked through and kept it for me to, when I was ready, come back and get it. Because what happened then is a different story. I was in this guided meditation when I was 33 or something. And my friend who was guiding said, right, describe the story. So I'm in an altered state, basically. I'm almost under hypnosis. And I'm lying on the couch. And he said, well, okay, you go up the stairs. So I said, right, I'm going up the stairs. I go for a pee. Okay, I come out. Turn right, go down the stairs, lady coming up the stairs. I walk through, I'm out the other side now. He goes, stop. He goes, now visualize very, very carefully. Slowly rewind. Come back, come back, come back, until I was completely in the ghost, in this being. And then literally, my horizontal body just electrically bucked straight off this couch. As in my visualization, what happened, the only way I could actually describe it would be, let's say, a beam of light, a bit like with all the numbers like in the Matrix, just smashing straight into my head. And I was getting a download of information that I've been looking for. I don't understand it since, but it was this download which was the reason that she wanted me to come back, or whoever was using this, let's say, etheric entity to come back. So I recovered the little piece of soul that I'd lost, soul retrieval, let's say, and I got this download. And then my life took it. I was 33 when that happened. And that was that. Then my life took another turn. So I'm a bit like a sailing ship that's just being pushed by the winds of the invisible.
Well, apparently that's the best way to live.
I have no idea. That's the way I live. So it's a way of coping with it, I suppose.
So maybe now tell us about the demonic spirits. Because you do exorcism.
Exorcism, or you could say deliverance. Exorcism, I think, is the phrase has been coined and is assigned to the Catholic Church. So they have exorcists. I trained with an exorcist for 5 years. And demonology, etc. It's fascinating. But I suppose you could say I'm, like they say in America, like lay non-religious people who do exorcisms, it's like deliverance ministry, which is sounds better, I think. And I've got a connection with the divine, my own connection with the divine, and deliverance of any sort, whether it's via the church or whatever, it's not the actual exorcist himself that is actually delivering you. It's coming from the divine. Mm-hmm. I'm a physical person. I have a spiritual body, but we do not have the capacity to do that. We are just, let's say, the master of ceremonies that create the atmosphere and use the right words, nomenclature, to actually call on the divine, who are there waiting to come down. They want to, but because there is freedom of choice, they do not have the right to actually intervene of their own accord. And so they need somebody who is incarnated to actually ask. And when you ask, they answer. When you knock, they open. And so it's just to create the right circumstances that if it is merited on somebody or whatever, that that it will that they will be delivered of these entities. And there are a whole range of different kinds of entities. But I've studied a lot, seen a lot of interviews with Catholic priests, etc. And I agree with them on certain things where they say that, well, if divine law exists, if, let's say, for sake of argument, there is a great architect, there is God, let's say, and he's given people freedom of choice, but there is divine law, universal law, and even demons have to obey those laws. We're in a system where it's like gravity. We have to obey gravity. Okay, we don't fly. Okay, it's like demons have to obey the laws, the divine laws, not necessarily the laws of nature, but the divine laws. And so, certain exorcists think that, or have postulated that, possession or demonic influence is actually can be used by God Himself to actually help spiritually lift somebody, to take them to the lowest so they can actually come back. And I've come to that conclusion as well, that it has been allowed, but for certain reasons.
That's so good.
Yeah. Yeah, even if it's bad, it can be good. I mean, if you've read the Bible, you can see that God has actually used some really, really bad motherfuckers to do His work. I mean, because He goes, right, you guys, well, okay, a bit dodgy, but you'll do the job, and so they get to do the job, and so it's not as clear cut as we actually think, People with problems with entities, I would say that the most basic entities that arrive are disincarnated souls, as in people who've died, who don't realize they've died, but they, so they're lost, they're stuck here. And what they need to do, a bit like any kind of animal, let's say, they need to nourish themselves energetically to be able to survive here. And so it's vampirism, let's say. They're not evil, they just need to eat. So they're a bit like a parasite, and they will jump onto us, and they are nourished by our spiritual energy and mainly our emotions, because when we say like high vibrations, which are very spiritual vibrations, and then we've got low vibrations, and they nourish on low vibrations, things like fear, anger, hate, sadness.
It's like sugar for cancer.
Exactly.
Okay.
So how do we get this kind of entity on us? What usually happens is because we resonate with the frequency that they are looking for. So you could be going home at night on the tube train, the metro. You get off at the last platform. It's dark. It's a bit spooky. And then, like, two guys with hoodies, like, come onto the platform. You think they're going to follow you. So suddenly you're like, oof, fear. And any entities that are there go, free buffet, free lunch, and they'll jump on to nourish from that. And then they can stay there. Usually they will be at the base of your spine, between your kidneys. And so people can have a lot of problems with, let's say, disincarnated souls on them. Sometimes if it's somebody that they've known, as in that they don't want to let go of, or the person who's died wants to stay and try and look after somebody, then it would probably be between the shoulder blades in the back, because it's the heart chakra, as you well know. It has a front entrance and it's got a back entrance. So basically, somebody who you might have known will hang out around the back door, let's say, of the heart chakra. So that's that kind of entity. Then
can you have more than one?
Yes, you can have hundreds,
yeah,
thousands.
which is scary.
Disincarnated souls, usually that would cause something like chronic back pain. I had a carpenter at quite young. He'd got chronic back pain for 15 years.
For no reason.
Well, he's a carpenter, so you'd think, something like that. But he was quite often off sick, etc. And chronic back pain. I'd actually gone to go and treat his wife for something. And she said, oh, check out the husband. And we looked, and he'd got like 250-something.
Can you
test
with all of them at once?
Yeah. And he got 250 of these entities on him, and so not me. Called in the cleaning team, and the cleaning team came in. Off they went, and 3 days later, he rang up. He goes, "I have no idea what you did," he said, "but my back pain's gone." So they can, because of the number of them. The fact is, they're parasites, so they're pulling energy out in this specific point. And you've got chronic back pain, which just left like that.
So the idea of getting these things out is also raising the vibration on this person?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And then he has to make an effort to, after that, try and stay positive, right? To not become a victim.
Some people, that's a very down-to-earth guy, carpenter, he doesn't care. It's like, oh, God, that's a bit over my head kind of thing. But yes, thanks, that was great. So you get a lot of that. But certain people, they do consider that a part of their conscious journey, the fact that they've come and got rid of these things, and then they can have more spiritual openings, because when you've got hundreds of entities, I mean, they're not letting anything in. And so when you clean away all that stuff, it leaves space for something else. But then you get the other scale where it goes towards like demonic influence and demonic even possession, which is a different story altogether. Because demons, they've been here for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. They know humans. They are disincarnated. They do not have bodies, and so they need bodies to possess, to influence, etc.
So, are they created by God as well?
If everything, you could say yes. There's the different schools of thought is, you know, well, if God is all seeing, all knowing and stuff, if he knew that Satan was going to have a bit of a pride problem and then break away, he could have just stopped that. But that's a theological and theological argument for or against that kind of thing. The fact that they exist, that others think that demons are, let's say, fallen angels, but don't buy that at all. The angels that fell with Satan are still angelic beings, and that demons are not. Angels can actually manifest in physical form. Whereas demons cannot. Demons are pure spirit beings. And Genesis 6, when the angels fell, they took human wives, they copulated with human women, and their offspring then became what were known as the Nephilim, which were the giants, the men of renown of old. And basically, they were considered, divine abominations. So half divine, half human. And so when they died, their souls they had no place to go. So they stayed here. And so they are considered as the demons, depending on your school of thought. So these demons have been around for a long time. They are way more intelligent than we are. I mean, way more intelligent than we are. They speak every single language. They know humans and human weakness inside out because they're designed to profit from that, for the destruction of that. And I know this, I mean, because I've had quite a few run-ins with them. And one particular instance, I actually had a run-in with probably, I think, Satan himself. Do you want to hear the story?
Yes.
Yes, please. Oh, a spiritual podcast. And we're going to do a story about Satan himself. Well, I was living in Valacene at the time, and I treated this lady for, she had a problem with electrosensitivity, where she couldn't stand electrosensitive things and stuff like that. So, and she was a patient of mine, and she knew what I did and stuff like that. And what actually, to cut a long story short, what happened was she was suffering badly from her electrosensitivity. So she went to a little small roadside chapel, you know, where you see the Virgin sometimes, you know, the little tiny little chapels, mm-hmm. side of the road. And she prayed to her, she said, her guardian angel to help her with her electrosensitivity. And she had a dream, and her guardian angel came. And she thought, oh, that's pretty cool. Very, very vivid dream. And the guardian angel started trying to influence her, and she got a bit wary in the dream, let's say. And so she called on Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ turns up. Well, what she thought was Jesus yeah. Christ. Even angels of darkness can dress themselves as beings of light. Jesus Christ turns up in a dream and said, well, I can get rid of all your electrosensitivity problems like that if we can have sex. And she, this, I mean, it's starting to get really weird. And so literally she was raped by who she thought was Jesus Christ in this dream. I mean, it was a waking dream. It was like a lucid dream until she orgasmed, physically orgasmed, okay? And it was at this point, a few days later, that she rang me and she said, I was upset about this, and I'm hearing voices in my head telling me to, like, jump off a bridge or, yeah, I mean, and whatever. And she said, well, I know somebody who can get rid of you, thinking of me. And then suddenly she said, when I said that, the voices in my head said, let's go.
The challenge.
Let's go meet this, this person. And so this was 10:30 at night, because she rang me and she said, I'm coming to see you. And I said, what? Why? And she, the voices in my head. And I thought, well, it's pretty serious. So 10:30 at night, she was battling to not drive off the road because they were saying, oh, turn right. And she's literally crying. She managed to park the car. I went to meet her. She fell out the car into my arms. And this is a 45-year-old Swiss businesswoman, okay? This is not somebody into anything. She's a trader, Swiss businesswoman. Falls into my arms. I hardly recognized her. Brought her into the house. And that was like 10:30, 11:00 at night. And then it was a battle till lunchtime the next day. It lasted all night. But during this battle, I scanned her, and she got 13 full-blown demons.
Pardon?
13 full-blown demons in her, on her. And so I called the cleaning team, as it were, to cut a long story short, and 12 of them just left instantly because they have to. One didn't. So the Last Supper, how many people were at the Last Supper?
13.
Yeah. 12 disciples and Jesus. She had 13 demons on her. 12 left instantly, one stayed, refused to go. And this was this tit-for-tat battle. And it got to about 3 in the morning, and dealing with demonic entities, you can actually find out what their name is. They are always lying, by the way, always. But you can sometimes you can force them to tell the truth.
And how do you hear it, like from her mouth, or do you see it?
This is she's speaking as well. I mean, this is she's sitting on the couch and she's drifting in and out of possession and coming back to being who she is normally. And it got to the stage where she was saying, like, yes, if you have sex with me, I'll leave. I said, no, it's no use. None of that. So it's always pushing, tempting, threatening. And then it was, he said, I know your children. And I said, you have no right on my children. The door has never been opened. You have no right. And he goes, I don't like you. You're far too intelligent. And this is a voice coming out of this lady. And I said, no flattery. Flattery will get you nowhere. I said, and so it's this.
Be vigilant.
Ultra vigilant. And I said to the lady, I said, you know the Lord's Prayer. I said, let's pray together. And so it's like, Our Father who art in heaven. So reciting the Lord's Prayer, and she is subtly inverting absolutely everything that's being said. And I'm thinking, wow, that is so clever. I mean, but very subtly, changing a word or the order of a word. And I'm thinking, she's completely inverted the whole meaning of the Lord's Prayer to turn it satanic. And I thought, ooh, this is
challenge.
I know it's. You're dumbfounded by the intelligence of these beings, and then it got to a stage where about 3:30 in the morning, I think, and I said, "Right, enough shit. Let's get down to business." And I said, "By the blood of Jesus Christ that He spilt on the cross for our sins, that won the victory against Satan. By in Jesus Christ's name, I order you to give me your name." And the lady, she was sitting with her head, she was exhausted, was this poor lady. Her head just shot up and her eyes just went completely black. I mean, literally, just completely black eyes. And she just leant forward and she stared. She goes, I am He of the Spirit. I am He who has been here since the beginning. You know very well who I am because I know very well who you are, Roger Lambert. And then it was just like, oh, fuck. And I knew instantly who it was. But it's like, no fear. It's because I'm being guided.
Yes, you know the rules.
You know the rules, yeah. And this is... And this is why it's the dangers of Ouija boards, spiritualism and stuff like that. You don't know the rules, you can get into seriously deep shit. And so that was then I thought, well, okay, this has just hit a completely different level now. I ended up getting in touch with the Diocese of Annecy, because every diocese in France has an exorcist, and they didn't want to know. Obviously.
You call them at that time?
Okay. Yeah, no, this is about 6:30 in the morning. And I never, we never got to the end of this. I ended up having to take her home in the morning. I got in touch with another, let's say, lay exorcist, who thought it was something completely different. And I thought, well, it's not my problem anymore. It's And apparently she's doing all right. This is a few years ago. I've still not bumped into her again. She lives in the same town as me, but I've still not bumped into her yet. But she thanked me profusely and this, like the other. And after that actually happened, all the people that used to come see me, because once you get known for doing kind of entity work, and you attract the people who, for what you're good at, you know? And so people would come, and nobody had entities. And I thought, my God, this is a holiday. Has this been the end of it? You know, have I now, do I need to go do something else or whatever? And then it was a friend of mine. She goes, well, you know, he's obviously, he came for a reason. And he came for a reason to stop me doing what I was actually doing when I met him. And so he basically cut off my senses so I couldn't capture, you know, sense entities and stuff like that. So I ended up doing certain prayers and whatever, and then got that back. So, and I sometimes think back on that situation, and the fact is everything happens for a reason. And I think that God actually caused this to happen to show me something. And then, so it actually took me in a different direction after that. So I think everything happens for a reason. But that was the episode of meeting Satan himself.
So you think it's still in her?
No. No, she was just used, I think, for this situation.
Something happens. Like, what would she have done to attract this on her?
She opened the door by, she prayed, and obviously this chapel was unconsecrated or lost its consecration, and it was used as a gateway. They're looking for doorways to get in. People who are in need, they will ask for anything. You know, I will do anything. I will do anything to get rid of this problem that I have in my life. And then when you shout out to the universe, it's not just the good guys that are listening. Everyone's listening, and they go, "Ooh, cool! That's in. That's a free ticket entry for demonic possession."
Everybody does this sometimes, no? This kind of
sorry.
When you are at the low points, you kind of sometimes say this to yourself. Okay?
Yep.
So you have to be careful of.
Be careful what you say. Especially out loud. In your head is one thing, but when you actually speak it, as they say in St. John, in the beginning was the Word was with God, the Word was God. And then Genesis 1, let there be light. God spoke the universe into, he created the universe using the verb. So when we all use the verb, it's a vibration that comes out your mouth and it goes into the universe. It's not just a thought, which is like a light vibration. The word.
And that's so also what is the power behind the word?
Yeah.
And I am, when you say I am, like, that's such a powerful mantra.
Yeah.
That's what you attract. That's what you become.
Exactly. I mean, most creation myths throughout the world, whether like Aboriginal, the dreams, or the American Indians, they sang. It's all to do with speaking the creation into existence. So the verb is extremely important. You know, it's like be careful what you say, because you actually create when you speak. It's when people come to me and they're saying, well, I do this, I do that, I've got my visualizations, my mantras, and this, that, and the other. And I said, well, how do you do that? And they go, well, I sit down, I prepare, and then I'm visualizing. I said, no, you want the key? The key is to say it. You say it. That's why magic words like abracadabra, it's these words are a lot of consonants sometimes, magical words. They're actually to be spoken in a certain way, in a certain vibration, and that actually are keys to open things. So the verb is just, I mean, it is mind-bogglingly important. So when you do your visualization, or if you're going to pray, let's say, for instance, to whatever God you want, but I mean, if you want to pray, then it's not like that. No, you speak it. You speak it, and it makes the world of difference. So.
And English must have become a very important language for this.
Sorry?
It seems that English, the English language.
Well, English, I think, because it's this universal language a bit now throughout the world. So the literature, let's say from the Western esoteric tradition, which is a lot of New Age shit, but it goes a lot further. But all languages have their own the intonation, and it's like energy flows where intention goes. You put your intention somewhere, then you speak something in whatever language.
Every culture has their own way of the universal God or whatever you say.
Yeah.
Like me, even if I'm praying in a church, whether it's in England or France, it would still be in Hindi here.
No, it doesn't matter. It's the intention. And you speak it. Yeah. So, and coming back to the magic thing, a lot of people have, you wouldn't believe how much magic is going on, let's say sorcery. That goes on. I mean, governments use it, political parties use it.
Dark magic?
Yeah. Mm. I mean, magic does not have a color. White magic, black magic, green magic, red magic, it's all the same.
So in the Bible, it's forbidden?
No. It's the only magic that should exist is divine magic.
Mm.
And that's theirs. And I mean, look outside. If you want to know God exists, look out the window. Look at nature. It's perfect. It's perfect. That is divine magic that's going on. And if you actually get in tune with divine magic, then you can use it. You can. It does make a difference in your life. But any other magic, what is magic? I would say that it's a manipulation of duality on a higher plane, let's say the astral plane mainly, that engenders a change in reality here. And it works.
Yeah.
Definitely. I mean, it's extremely powerful. That's why things like human sacrifice is rife still in the world and in France, all over the world. I mean, it's, if you look beyond the veil, or look behind your TV, not literally, but behind the garbage that they're churning out, magic is just everywhere. And magic, where is it? Wherever there is sex, power, and money mixed, always magic.
Mm.
Always. So, and magic is an egregor. It has its own like resonating battery sphere of consciousness. And I used to practice magic, but not exteriorized, always interiorized on myself. I created my own rituals, etc. Until I understood that, in fact, it's a trap. It's a trap. And it's a trap of power. And coming back to my own personal story, I basically traversed the sphere of consciousness, let's say the egregor of magic, in 4 years. I would invent rituals that I would perform, and I'd had people in the astral plane come and watch, and people ring me up the next day that I didn't even know, and they say, "What the fuck did you do last night?" Because I was, I think, exercising muscles that I'd already used from previous existences, spirit-wise, my spirit, so I could understand. And then one of my life goals, I think, in this life was to actually come out the other side of the magical sphere of consciousness, let's say the egregor of magic. And that actually happened to me in a waking dream. a very lucid dream, almost out of body experience, where I popped out the other side of the egregor and I was like floating in the universe in space. And I looked back in, I could see all these people trapped. And the fact is, you can be really powerful in magic and you think you're communicating with the divine, but you're not. You're just in this self-perpetuating like bubble.
Yourself.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And at that moment, I just understood how magic works, why it shouldn't exist. And then that's when I'm floating around in this thing, looking at this sphere, and then this blinding light just appears from behind and just completely envelops me. And then almost as if somebody leant forward, basically it was Christ. He leant forward and he whispered in my ear, he says, "Roger, now you understand, you can come work for me." And that's basically when I found Christ. And that completely changed my life. So that's my personal experience, how I came to Christ. And so whatever I do now, I do in his name. I do what he tells me to do, which is a great adventure because it takes me all over the world. It takes me everywhere and to help people. So... But that's my personal experience. But it's not for everybody.
Based on your belief. In the sense, because you consider yourself Christian. If you're not a Christian, probably it would be some other...
Who knows?
Be some other guru would come in. Who would call you in his service. It's not religion-based.
Don't know. Couldn't say. Couldn't say. Each to their own.
Yeah.
That's my experience. That's the nomenclature and the vocabulary that I use and the archetypes that I use to actually explain what's happening to me. And that obviously some part of me, is it part of me? Or is it actually exterior to me that are coming in and influencing and communicating with me in this way? I have no idea.
What's important is the change happening in you, the impact.
Yeah, it's taking me in a direction that is. I no longer think about myself. It's like the death of ego, as they say. There's other ways of doing that, but it was the death of ego, and it's to dedicate myself to helping people. So I don't think it's a bad thing, actually. So it's what's come of it, whether that is an example or that is actually a concrete fact of how the universe works, what it's doing. Does that apply to everybody or does that just apply to me? I've no idea, but that's the way I've interpreted what's happened to me throughout my whole life. My meetings, I mean, I've had just bizarre shit happening to me ever since I've been 6 years old, which has brought me to where I am here.
Is that scary at times?
No.
The incident with
fear. Fear no longer comes into it. There are worse things than death, that's for sure.
Exactly. Are you scared of that? Death is the easy part.
Yeah.
But when you're dealing with demonic entities, sometimes are you scared for your family?
I think that Christ's got my back. I hope he has. I really hope he has. And St. Michael as well. Again, another archetype that can be mirrored through other theological schools of thought. But I hope they have my back. And I hope I'm doing the right thing.
Just to get into a bit of controversy, because he said, when you talk about these evil entities, magic or sorcery for that matter, always look what they are trying to show you behind. I personally always felt that's what happened with COVID. Like, it was a very dark power that was running the entire show.
And still is.
Still is. And they managed to get the whole world together into that. It didn't. It wasn't limited to one. So you can imagine the power of that entity, whatever it was, who was doing that.
I mean, when you look at what COVID was actually trying to do on a global scale, if you look at it, through the lens of there is some nefarious entity, organization or whatever behind this. So I'm going to put those glasses on and look at it. Yeah, for sure.
So,
I mean, it was for us to give up our bodily autonomy. It was for us to give up.
So the same thing as the entity before. It's like tempting you, you know. If you do it, you can go on holiday.
Yeah.
If you take this and you're free.
There's no such thing as a free dinner. No, you know, you got to pay the bill eventually.
That's the way.
Is it? What's happening today, I would say, on a very, very basic level, it is a war for your soul. For your soul. You only have one. We're not talking about your spirit because that's universal.
There's going to be a split, you know.
Your soul is, and they want that. I mean, this is why, let's say from a Christian perspective, when we're looking at the apocalypse or invention revelations, where I think we're getting towards the end times for sure. The amount of control that's trying to be pushed on us. Let's talk about the mark of the beast. Okay. I saw a thing on YouTube the other day. A reporter went to China. And in China at the moment, there are 130 million surveillance cameras. And in the next 3 years, they want another 480 million. So that's over half a billion surveillance cameras. Okay. And he went to one of the control centers, this journalist, and they were saying, well, we can find out who you've been speaking to, who they speak to, where they do, the bank accounts and everything. I mean, this is total surveillance. And he said, well, okay, let's put it to the test. So that obviously when he came to China, they'd scanned him. Whatever before he can get in, and so they just punched his details into the machine, and they go right. So he goes, okay, I'm going to now leave here, and I'm going to try and walk to the railway station. How long before they get me? 6 minutes. 6 minutes. Six policemen just came out of nowhere at the train station. And virtually jumped him. And because they weren't in on the fact that he was just doing an experiment. They thought he was a dangerous criminal. And so, and he goes, oh my God, you could hear on the radio, on the film, he goes, I don't think they know that this is just a test. And they jumped him. So to give up absolutely everything. So you become just part of this big machine. So, which is the mark of the beast? You won't be able to buy, to sell.
Yeah, the mark.
The mark, and so that's why I cling a bit to, let's say, this Christian vision of it, because they have actually written what's happening, and it seems pretty scarily like this is all pushing towards this. And so you're talking about COVID, where we now know that it came from a lab. We now know that Pfizer and Moderna, they're all in cahoots with the government and stuff like that. And so it's just so that we will be giving up our bodily autonomy. We had no privacy. So it was almost like a dry run for the mark of the beast. So it's no longer conspiracy theory now. It's conspiracy fucking fact that we're heading not down a very pleasant road.
It's powerful people trying to control you because you can think only flat. You can only think in the human physical form perspective. But look at the amount of misery they caused during that time.
Yeah.
Like that was one of the reasons why I called you, because I was really scared that because I was starting to become so sad, I was scared that I might attract one of these negative entities, and I was just
then would push you over the edge. I mean, a demon would do anything in its power to get you to commit suicide.
Yeah. That is what happened. A lot of people did it. During that time,
it's another alchemical phrase is as above, so below, and as within, so without. It comes from the Emerald Tablet of Thoth of Hermes, which is saying that as above, so below. So what's happening above, in, let's say, in the heavenly realms, is happening here. I mean, there's a full-blown fucking battle going on in the heavens between the armies of Satan and the armies of God. And we are mirroring that on Earth. And so we look at things just purely on a physical level, you know, things in Israel, Palestine, this, that, and the other. But the fact is, in the invisible realms, it's happening as well. So it's on a scale that is much bigger than like the normal human can actually comprehend. And when I look at anything that's happening now, I think, well, what is happening behind that in the spiritual realm? And everything is ramping up at the moment. That's why we were saying before we even sat down to talk, there's a lot more demonic traffic going on. It's more and more current. There's more manifestations. There's more visual witnessing. Huh?
It seems that more people are waking up at the same time.
It's but because here we live in duality. So when light and dark, like the sign yin and the yang, they are always looking for homeostasis, always looking for balance. It's like even in your body's always looking for homeostasis. So as let's say, compare it to Star Wars, when Star Wars was good. When the darkness rises, the light rises to meet it. It's a divine, it's a natural thing that happens. It's like in nature, every poison has its anti-poison. We're in duality. Everything has its polar opposite.
Yeah.
And so as darkness rises, lightness rises as well. And so who's getting, it's this divine balance that's been looked for. And it's all going to come to a head eventually. I mean, they could get into an alchemical explanation of that, polarity and alchemical marriages and stuff, but that could be for a different podcast. But you can't go too far in one sitting.
Thing is going to happen, we can feel it, no?
Something's going to pop, yeah, for sure. Something's going to pop. And so coming back to your view of the fact that COVID and there's something a lot bigger going on. That's just what we see. But like most a stage magician, he will do something to divert your attention for when he's doing the sneaky bit. And that's what's happening that we're seeing at the moment. I'm sure recently politically what we're seeing like yesterday in France and stuff. These it's a magical war, and it is a spiritual war that people are using magic in it, and then there's divine magic, and there's where also the freedom of choice.
Yeah.
Libre arbitre in French, but the freedom of choice that God has given us all means he's letting it happen. He's letting it happen. He's letting it play out. But yeah, everything you see is just like the tip of an iceberg, because in the spiritual realm, it's happening as well. And it's happening on a bigger scale, in the spiritual realm. And that's what I'm seeing at the moment. And the fact that the astral plane, the veils between the spiritual and the physical are starting to split. This is why there's certain rumors of there's going to be disclosure about aliens soon, which I think are demonic entities. But and so they're prepping for what's actually happening. The war in the heavens is not just being reflected here on Earth now, it's spilling over And so that's why we're seeing a lot of weird shit that's going on.
And it's so clear to see the lies and...
No, maybe it's not.
But most people don't see.
Yeah, because probably...
No, they don't want to see.
No. Yeah, well, you get the ostrich.
So big.
Yeah, nice. You get the ostriches that prefer to stick their head in the sand and not see what's going on, despite the fact that it's now staring us in the face. And I think that's why it's ramping up, because it's staring us in the face more and more. More and more people are waking up, even like on the internet. A lot of even big podcasters like Joe Rogan, Jordan Peterson, Russell Brandt, this kind of people, Lex Friedman, the big podcasters. It's coming over now, and it's now being openly talked about.
It's kind of technology, so like,
AI coming, which I don't think has anything very good about it.
Yeah.
Again, putting our trust, as in giving up our control of something, to putting it into somebody else's hands.
Maybe it's already.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows? I don't know how far it's going, but I'm quite sure. What I can imagine, it's not even 10% of. I imagine it's not even 10% of what's actually going on. So, but it's spiritual warfare.
But most people, I think, don't want to see it, because just like in the Bible, it says when wisdom comes, sorrow follows, and the more wisdom, the more sorrow.
Yeah.
So it's like waking up also. That's what happened to me during COVID. Some weeks, some days, I was just like completely no hope. No? I was like, how is this possible? Like, you know? But I prefer to know. And then there's fear
of the unknown. Why are people afraid of the dark? Let's say kids are afraid of the dark because you can't see. It is unknown. You do not know what is out there.
Yeah.
When you're confronted with something, you can see it. And then this is like people, you speak to a lot of soldiers that I've done as well. People, or even just like, let's say an actor going onto the stage at theatre. All of them are always says they're shitting themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like when I did the TED talk, it's the first time I've really spoken publicly. It was like in front of 450 people. And beforehand, I'm just shitting myself. And then you go out there and you start and that's it.
Yeah.
It's gone. Absolutely. You're doing it because you are then doing something. And so, like in COVID, stay at home, do nothing, and let's scare the fuck out of you. And so because you're feeling then powerless, you're sitting at home, you're doing nothing, you're being told to do nothing, you can't do anything, I can't even go to the shops or whatever. And so obviously that's engendering fear, uncertainty. And we talked about earlier, what do these kind of entities, even let's say non-nefarious entities like disincarnated souls, feed on? That feed on. So you are instantly attracting unwelcome interest from the spiritual realm.
Yeah, this was an easy way to notice that they were not trying to help us, the people in government. Because they were really trying to make people afraid.
Yeah.
And when we are the father of a nation, just like for the children, you will do anything so that they're not scared.
Yeah.
And in France, Macron, or in the UK, I think the BBC,
America, everyone.
Ramp up for the vaccine.
Yeah.
But normally you should do the opposite if you love your country. Yeah.
And I mean, I'm loving about the vaccine now. What's coming out? Yeah. Like even, like the interviews, the papers and stuff with Pfizer, like Moderna and stuff, it's like they knew their vaccine was shit. And I mean, and it's, and the fact that it's a mRNA delivery system, it was never designed to be used as a vaccine anyway. And what were they putting into this thing? I mean, there was like DNA. It's to alter our DNA. And this is another story coming back to a bit of a a spiritual bent. I read a book recently by Timothy Alberino, and it was something to do with the birthright of humanity, where we from Adam, who was given dominion over Earth, Adam and Eve, let's say. So the human species was given dominion over Earth. This is our home. This is where we're from. We're made of Earth. We come from the Earth. Our bodies go back to the Earth. And it is our divine inheritance because we are human. We have been made in God's image. And so what are the, let's say, the certain vaccines and let's say nefarious enterprises driven by satanic certain doctrines of Satanism? So they are putting like DNA in these things to alter our DNA. Why are they doing that? They're putting, let's say, their own DNA in that or whatever. So they are unhumanizing us. This is where transhumanism comes in as well. They are trying to adulterate our bloodline to the extent that we no longer have the right to inherit the earth. So we are losing possession of our home. And I think Timothy Alberino comes to a great conclusion that this transhumanism, all these vaccines that are basically trying to change our DNA so we can live forever. Mm-hmm. Temptation.
Right.
Yeah, you don't have to die, guys. We are adulterating our DNA to the extent that we no longer have the right, or that demonic entities that are within us or whatever, when it's there, they can actually inherit the right themselves. So it's another avenue of research to look into of the spiritual warfare that's going on, the fact that we are being disinherited.
I mean, if it was not so serious, like the effects or whatever is happening, it would almost be funny thinking that all of this, whether it was Pfizer or Moderna, they had their own papers where all of this was written. You will not be able to reproduce, there'll be problems with this, there'll be health problems, there'll be cardiac arrest, there'll be cancers, arthritis even, you know. And all this is in the papers, which were kept away. Yeah. And now they're all coming out, and there are people who still believe in the vaccine. Like, if it was not so serious, so demonic, let's say, it would almost be funny. Like, you would be laughing at it. Like, what
the
rubbish?
I think the bigger the lie, the easier it is to sell. And because I think human nature would think, no, it can't be true. How could anybody be so nefarious as to try and wipe out the human race? No, that's bullshit. They wouldn't do that, would they?
Yeah, plus we try to.
Yes, they fucking would, and that's what they're doing. Huh?
We try to avoid conflicts.
Yeah, yeah. It's like
things go on as they are.
Business as usual is cool with me, they say. And so they will accept anything so that their daily life does not change. Because people don't want to change. People prefer to be in their daily grind. Spiritual evolution requires change. It requires sacrifice. That's when people come to me and say, oh, yeah, I've had a spiritual awakening. I said, oh, yeah. Cool. So, yes, I was on a beach in Ibiza and I was listening to some music and I could feel my chakras opening and it was just absolutely wonderful. And I said, well, for a start, that's probably bullshit, because real spiritual awakening, I would probably not wish on anybody, because you think you're going to die. Sometimes you virtually die. It's painful. It's horrible. And I think that's why it's not for everybody. It's because a real spiritual evolution requires work and it requires sacrifice and it requires cutting away things from your psyche, from your life, etc., that might include friends, it might include diet, it might include this. And then usually when the actual event occurs, you think you're going to die, you've got symptoms. I ended up in hospital and they took me to hospital. And the doctors found absolutely nothing wrong, which was obvious because I was going through something completely different, but I'd got all these symptoms. And they said, well, no, there's nothing wrong with you. I knew what was happening. But it's horrible. And I think it's like any real transition in life that it leaves a mark on you and you know that you've actually walked through a door. You've opened a door and you've shut it behind you. You know you've stopped something and you're starting something new. And it's not by just saying, oh, that's a choice. Yeah. Oh yeah, it's cool. I've had an awakening. No, it needs to be ingrained in your psyche, in your cellular memory. And you need to have virtually died. Woken up covered in your own vomit, shit and piss, and you're in pain, you're crying, and it's horrible. And then you're not going to forget that. And that's the kind of passage that goes through. I mean, because I think the biggest spiritual, let's say, doorways that we walk through in life are when we're born, which is, I think, fairly traumatic for the mother and for the child. Because hold on, I mean, why is the from the uterus to the vagina, why does the baby have to go around like a fucking U-bend in a toilet? Why can't it just come straight out? No, it needs to be bent and smashed and just forced through this passage. I mean, it's an initiation. It's a real initiation, is that, and for the mother and for the child. And I think the other one in life is actually when you leave. Death, when you hang on to your last breath and it's like, panic, and then goes. So they're both traumatic experiences. Huh?
Anything in between.
Disease,
people dying.
Yeah. If everything happens for a reason, then everything that happens to you is for a reason. So it can force you to make choices in life.
But I feel this is like a school, Earth, and
depression.
And then you can be selected to go into the next level.
Yeah.
That's how I would say that in reincarnation, in that way, is like, it's not like you start again. So you continue, but it's a different kind of...
Yeah. You come back with different tools, let's say.
Yeah.
Where you go, okay, you've... instead of coming back naked with nothing... Now we've given you more discernment. We've given you a hammer. We've given you a nail. You can now do this a lot easier. And so I think then freedom of choice as well. Then you go through and you can say yes or no to anything. The divine might appear and say, you have this opportunity. Do you want to take it? Left path, right path, whatever, the crossroads, or whatever. You always have the choice.
So, Roger, do you want to tell us where do we find you?
Well, I have my website, which is auchaotique.com. So that's in French. Chaotique, it's people wonder, what does that mean? And that's chaotic water, in fact. And people go, that's a bit sort of aggressive con title. And I said, well, no, it actually comes from the Bible, Genesis verses 1-3, where when God passed his hand over the waters and said, let there be light. And there was light. So that's the waters that he's talking about, the chaotic waters or the primordial waters of creation. What I would consider as the ultimate potential, non-manifest. So it's pure potential that has not actually had any instruction. So that's when God passed his hand and said, let there be light. And there was light. So it's part of creation. So they're the primordial waters of creation. So that's ochaotique.com, which is my site more dedicated to alchemy, where I have my web shop as well, where people can buy products. And I have my Instagram as well, which is O_Chaotique, where I publish a lot of my alchemical experiences for people to share with people as well. So that's where you can find me.
People can do treatment also, or distance?
Distance treatments as well. People can contact me via the website for a consultation, which would then be probably start with a telephone call, find out what people need, and then I can work with them or on them from a distance. I like to see people as well, but I've got patients all over the world. Some, most of them I've never met. But because when you're working with energy at this level, distance doesn't exist. So you could be with me or 1,000 miles away. We could actually create a link. So that's where people can contact me if they need any help. But I treat less and less people now, more concentrated on the alchemical side of it, on education. To help people create their own powerful medicines for physical problems and psycho-spiritual problems and spiritual development, because certain alchemical preparations have they're such high vibration and they are so bioavailable. And these are medicines that are usually made from metals or minerals as well, like crystals, etc., that are totally bioavailable, that alter the information of the human body to open pathways to help spiritual development and heal. So,
thank you so much for today.
It was a pleasure, and if you invite me back, I will come back with pleasure.
We will definitely. Thank you.
Thank you.